it's going. Well, we won't worry about it.
Are you live on the air?
Yeah. Go Rightly is opening a beer. Ooh, that was nice. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry we were late.
I left my keys in the apartment that has been termite tented. Is that what on?
Testing, testing.
Ooh. Go Rightly knows about the open window here. When all the siren noises come in.
Should take bets. Bet on what time the...
siren pool.
Are you and me are just betting, or is this open to the listening audience, or what do you...
Oh, you know what? Maybe I should make it open to the listening audience, but you'll have to go on Facebook so I can see what your vote is. Whoever says it first.
Have them just post, so they'll say, okay, at... 8:46, okay. And so once somebody sees 8:46, I can't have the 8:46.
Yeah, I will. Then I will recuse myself if we're throwing it open to listeners.
Yeah, let's do a contest, and the winner will get a signed copy of the Story of Discordia.
Okay. All right. So we will do the intro, and then we will. It's not on yet. The contest will be on after the intro music plays for Roddy Mysterioso. This, however, is Rocky Erickson. You know this one?
Well, I know Rocky. It was obvious. No one sounds like him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I know this song.
It's called If You Have Ghosts.
This is probably Rocky and the Aliens period.
What? Get your hands up.
Stand where you are. Don't move.
Don't reach for them guns.
Take it easy, you galoots. Put away the hardware and relax.
It's Greg.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about...
Radio Mysterioso.
Let me raise my seat just slightly there. Hey,
you raise your seat on the board there?
Yes. You know about this, right?
Yeah.
I put ever so slightly more bass in mine, so I sound more macho, and then for the guest, I just turn the treble way up, and so they sound like a mouse.
It's like the Andy Kaufman routine.
Talk show hosts have that thing where their chair is just slightly higher than the guest. So the way I do it on this show is I turn my bass up just slightly, unless it's a woman guest, which happens occasionally.
You know the Andy Kaufman show I'm talking about?
Sorry, you might have to get closer to that.
You know the Andy Kaufman show I was talking about?
Yes, it's the one with the Tony Clifton puppet, and he sits on it. His chair is basically like 10 feet higher than the guest.
He did some stuff, and I have a bunch of tapes from television shows he did that I don't know.
all of them ever got aired. They were so off the wall, you know, that
yeah, sold I've seen clips.
Yeah, it's bizarre stuff. So, yeah, one is the talk show host, and his chair raises over the course. By the end of the show, he's like 10 feet in the air having to yell down at the guests. Something of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen I saw them strangely enough when they were originally aired. I think I saw a few because I had a friend that was all into Kaufman. He said,
yeah,
Kaufman's going to be on. He's got a talk show. We have to see this. So we actually watched it. I remember seeing the Tony Clifton puppet yelling at people and Kaufman like way the hell up in the.
Yeah, the bizarre little Tony Clifton puppet that we saw when we saw Tony Clifton. How long ago was that? It's been a few years now.
Did he have a puppet there?
Yeah, that puppet was there. It performed. Yeah.
That's right. You're right.
They brought it out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, didn't he come out first?
I don't recall. The puppet was like out in the audience doing his thing, you know? It was bizarre.
Yeah. Amazing. If you don't know who Tony Clifton is, then go look it up. You're listening on the internet. Go look it up. What the Adam has proposed here is the Radio Misterioso Go Rightly contest, in which he will give away a signed copy of what Discordia?
Historia Discordia.
Historia Discordia, the nice 8.5x11 large format, beautiful book signed. If you can guess, get closest to the actual time of guess when a siren will come by the studio. We have the windows wide open for it. So horns don't count.
So get on the Radio Misterioso Facebook page. I'm assuming most of the listeners go there and put in your time and see what the other times are so you're not duplicating it, but it can be whatever.
And whoever's closest, and God, what should we use as a timer? I guess I'll just use this. It's according to my computer right now, it's 8:25 p.m. here in Los Angeles. So if you can give us like a Pacific time, it would be easier. This show started a few minutes ago at 8:10 or so p.m.
Correct. If it's Eastern time or Mountain time or Central Standard time, you'll be disqualified from the contest.
That's right. That's a good rule. Yeah. So with the closest anyone is to the first siren that is heard in this studio during this show will win a signed copy of Historia Discordia. Or Historia Discordia.
Have you ever had a show where you didn't have a siren and maybe you didn't notice it, or it seems like everyone at some point?
There's been a couple where I hear them, but I purposely don't say anything. Just because it's like, okay, I'm not going to say anything about this one. Or we're just talking about something important at the time. It's like, you know what? This is more important than dicking around with the...
Yeah.
Yeah, see,
guests talking about the meaning of life. And
wait, listen, there's a siren. You missed it. God damn it. Oh, what happened to my, here they are. I have to give Micah Hanks a Yeti and Bigfoot giving each other a high five message back. There we go.
Hello, Micah Hanks. He did a real nice interview with Paul Kimball right after that Roswell slides fiasco, and I posted on his Graylian page. Yeah, so it was a good interview. Right after the interview he did with those fellows.
Okay, we've got three entries for a surf. First, Jeremiah says first siren at 9:13 PST. Miles says 9:37, and Bob Maury says 9 o'clock. Those are really closely bunched together.
Have you kept track over the years? Do you have statistical analysis of...
They generally seem to come towards the end, so these people are longtime listeners. Occasionally it will come, you know, very, very, very quickly on the...
Yeah, it's usually after 9 o'clock or so. It seems like the second half of the show.
Yeah. Oh, come on, Carlos. Now he says 9:23.
That might work, you know, using the Discordian... one of the Discordian holy numbers.
Yeah, I said... What I said earlier with the on the post was no idea what we're going to talk about. Listener Bernie Mooney said stuff. Bob wants to hear about stuff too. Jeremiah, is it Duggar or Duggar? You're going to have to tell me, Jeremiah.
This show tonight is going to be about Dodger talk.
Yeah, let's just talk about Dodger talk. Have you read this, The Secret and Suppressed?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Regarding the piece in Thornley, it's the piece called Is Paranoia the Future of Awareness, the Kerry Thornley bit.
I'm well familiar with it. That is, I actually looked at that recently, and that piece is an excerpt of a larger work that Thornley did on, you know, his association with the Kennedy assassination and Oswald. And that was the piece there in Secret and Suppressed was excerpted from a longer thing Thornley wrote called Dreadlock Recollections. Secret and Suppressed. So there was two different editions of Secret and Suppressed, and I was in the second one that's like 2007, 2008 that Ken Thomas edited for Feral House, and I had my piece in there about Tuesday Weld and the psychedelic Illuminati conspiracy. So
yeah,
and the first Secret and Suppressed, that was really one of those books, you know, that those handful of books that really
seminal.
Seminal, yeah, for that period of time, for conspiracy culture research back in the early 90s, you know.
Okay, well, he had a specific question. Wait, let me read it. About that Thornley piece.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the piece in Thornley itself.
He's asking the right man here.
he says conspiracies are dangerous mainly because they spawn paranoia. He then states that he was hauled into court by Garrison on a suspicion of involvement in the JFK assassination. But then says Garrison's suspicions were in part due to the process Church framing him. Is any of this true?
I'm very familiar with Thornley's work, so it's not like a yes, no answer. There's more to that, and I have, this always gets so complicated
make it simple. No, don't make it simple. Just explain the way you would, because you're a lot clearer on a lot of things than I am.
So in 2003, I wrote the first book, Prankster and the Conspiracy, looking at all of this, how Thornley was indicted by Garrison, and Thornley had known Oswald and the Marines, and there's all these connections. So that was the first book. I kind of dipped my toes into that. Then in 2009, I got the Discordian Archives passed on to me, actually Bob Newport, who lives down here in L.A. He was one of the early Discordians, and he ended up with the files of Greg Hill, who was the co-founder of Discordianism, with Kerry Thornley. So in that material were all of Kerry's writings about the Kennedy assassination and his meetings with Oswald and the Marines. So the material dated back to stuff he was writing in the early 60s all the way up into the 70s. And as time progressed, Thornley went off the deep end in the mid-70s. Part of that was because he ate a lot of acid back in the days, but he was also persecuted by Jim Garrison, unjustly in my opinion. That kind of drove him off the deep end, and all these things eventually led to a psychotic breakdown. He had was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, and he eventually came out of that. But so you can look at his writings over the years, especially during that period in the mid-70s. I have some of his letters where he really began to suspect that everybody was in on the conspiracy. All of his friends in the Discordian Society began to suspect that was some type of CIA front organization, that Robert Anton Wilson was his CIA handler. And so a lot of this stuff got woven in later. You know, the Process Church was in New Orleans during that time period, but I think Thornley confabulated a lot of those connections later, that somehow the Process was involved in all of this. Maybe they were, but I don't think so. But Kerry started suspecting a lot of things, you know, that there was this, you know, his classic paranoid schizophrenic, that he was at the center of this vast conspiracy because of his knowledge of Oswald and all of this, and he'd been duped into the being manipulated much in the same way that Oswald was in the Kennedy assassination. That's a rambling answer, but
accurate answer. Actually followed it.
So that's, you got to look at Thornley's writings over the years, and I'd got some real bizarre letters, and we're talking, you know, a very this was, you talk about seminal. Thornley was always ahead of his time with stuff, you know, going back into the 60s. He was edited like in the mid 60s, the first libertarian newsletter that was really progressive, and people remember him for that, you know, and that his political ideology and thoughts evolved over the years, and he became an anarcho-libertarian, and he was into, you know, the first wave of psychedelic experiment and sexual experiment. So he was at ground zero of the whole 60s revolution, and a lot of, you know, people don't, he's not really a familiar name the same way that like a Ken Kesey or Timothy Leary, but in retrospect, he was very influential, you know, to a lot of things, you know, like, for instance, Illuminatus trilogy wouldn't have happened without the Discordian Society and Greg Hill and Kerry Thornley. So, yeah, interesting character and a long-winded answer, but it's hard to...
No, I mean, I want to hear the long-winded answer, and I'm sure Jeremiah wanted to. He said, pronounce Duggar, and also no relation to the infamous Dugars.
Yeah, I've seen those Dugars in the news, and I have no clue who they are.
I didn't either, and then I looked it up. I was just like, wow, these people
Some
are insane.
This reality is show people? Or
yeah, they're in a fundamentalist Christian group. That it, part of their group philosophy is women are the Bible says women are there to be, you know, wives, mothers, and to shut up and be subservient. And also they're completely against any kind of birth control. And if some women can't conceive children, there's something horribly wrong with them. And, they just want to populate their. It's like any other crazy group that has this horrible fear that they might not be right, even though they tell everybody they're absolutely right. So they have to impress their shit on everybody else. The other part of Jeremiah Duggar's question was, can Thornley be taken at face value? You kind of answered that in the question. In this instance, meaning the with Garrison and him being the process, you know, involved with the process church or being framed by the process mm-hmm. church. Or should he be read in the same way as someone say Gray Barker or John Keel? I think he was pretty literal.
Yeah, he was, but he was also theorizing sometimes. And later on, you know, some of the things he theorized, he later changed his mind about. But I think he was pretty sincere most of the time. Of course, he had this legend with the, you know, involvement with the Discordian Society as being a prankster, you know, and that later kind of came and bit him on the butt, you know, years later where, you know, back in the day he made fun of the people with paranoid thought and actually wrote a long
religious
text. Yes, I
posted that recently.
And so, but later, and Robert Anton Wilson wrote the foreword to my book, The Prankster and the Conspiracy, and talked about that episode he had with Thornley and, you know, the moral of the story is Wilson said something to the effect of take caution with the whacked out paranoids you make fun of. You know, you might become one of them, which was exactly what happened to Thornley. Because it's funny, they were... And the Discordian Society is huge in the development and the evolution of the Illuminati, as we know it in popular culture. And that came out of the Garrison investigation, crazily enough, when Thornley got indicted and was under investigation by Garrison. You had all these different investigators showing up in New Orleans volunteering their time. They became known as the Daily Plaza Irregulars, you know, like a takeoff on Sherlock Holmes, Baker Street irregulars. Yeah. And so one of them was this John Birch Society guy by the name of Alan Chapman, who believed to his theory was the Illuminati, Bavarian Illuminati, was behind the JFK assassination, which was starting to float around during that period, you know, with John Birch Society types. So when Thornley heard about this, he cooked up a new branch of the Bavarian Illuminati, and they all used their Discordian names, and they came up with this fake letterhead that said the Bavarian Illuminati, the world's oldest and most successful conspiracy. And they started sending out these prank letters, and some of them were to Garrison just to screw with him and saying, yeah. Denying that, no, they weren't involved in the assassination, you know, but they've come here to illuminate you and these type of things. And this got injected in the Garrison investigation. Yeah, and at one point, Garrison seriously considered the possibility, yeah, that who is this Discordian Society? Are they linked to the CIA? He suspected Thornley was CIA. So it's just a crazy story, but that kind of began, some people think, one of the reasons that, you know, the mythos of the Illuminati's has become so popular nowadays, you know, back in the late 60s, that was just a very obscure thing that not too many people knew anything about. Nowadays, it's like out of control.
Yeah, what was that quote from Thornley, that letter he sent out about paranoia and about getting caught up in it? Or something, if there's a commandment, like, is it on your page somewhere?
Well, yeah, I have. If people are into this stuff and want to find out more, there's the Historia Discordia website.
Oh, that's it, right.
And so in those Discordian materials were a lot of stuff that appears in the book that we're giving out tonight as a prize, whoever guesses the time. But I post a lot of things on the Historia Discordia website, and one of them was called the Epistles to the Paranoids.
Yes.
Which, it's one of those things that, like in the Principia Discordia, there's an excerpt from that, you know. And a lot of people assume that's all there was to the Epistles to the Paranoids, that one page. But I discovered, you know, there's like 6 or 7 pages. And so as I come across this stuff, I'll either post it on the website. And it's a lot, like a lot of the things, if people are familiar with the there you go, that's you brought that up, that's from the Principia Discordia.
Yeah,
and it says
I was going to read it. It's like, yeah, no, let it is Adam's deal, and I want him to read it.
Go ahead.
You want me to read it?
Yeah.
The chapter one, the Epistle to the Paranoids by Lord Omar.
So yeah, I'll set the stage for this. They
yes,
were they
please.
Were coming up with their own kind of Discordianism.
I like this bit here, so go ahead.
One of the things was like as a way to poke fun at major religions, and so they came up with their own religious tracks. One of them is called The Honest Book of Truth, which, and a lot of these appeared for the first time. They were mentioned in the Illuminatus trilogy. If you read the Illuminatus trilogy, it mentions Omar Khayyam Ravenhurst, who is Cary Thornley,
yeah.
Mal Eclipse the Younger, who is Greg Hill.
Yeah.
And it mentions these things like the Honest Book of Truth, the Principia Discordia. Nobody knew. They thought they were just making these things up, but and that's how people later discovered some of these Discordian works. So like the Honest Book of Truth, for many years, people thought it was just the one page in Principia Discordia, and that's was all there was to it. But when I got those Discordian archives, I found it's pretty long. It's like a 20-page thing, the Honest Book of Truth, and it was inspired. Thornley grew up in Mormonism, so it's kind of based on some of the Mormon religious texts. So anyway, that's kind of the background behind some of these writings. And the Omar Khayyam Ravenhurst, who is the author of this, that was Cary Thornley's Discordian, one of his Discordian names. Greg, I'll pass it over to you.
Okay, well, I'll read this then. The Epistle to the Paranoids. It's a list. 1, ye have locked yourselves up in cages of fear, and behold, do ye now complain that ye lack freedom! Exclamation point. 2, ye have cast out your brothers for devils, and now complain ye, lamenting, that ye've been left to fight alone. 3, all chaos was once your kingdom. Verily, held ye dominion over the entire pentaverse. Very important. But today ye wax sore, afraid in dark corners, nooks, and sinkholes. 4, oh, how the darkness do crowd up one against the other in ye hearts. What fear, what fear ye more than that which ye have rotten? Rotten's good. 5, verily, verily, I say unto you, not all the sinister ministers of the Bavarian and Illuminati, working together in multitudes, could so entwine the land with tribulation as have your baseless warnings. There's a little handwritten note at the bottom. Despite strong evidence to the contrary, persistent rumor has it that it was Mr. Momomoto's brother.
Mosumoto, yeah.
Oh, Mosumoto's brother, who swallowed Mr. says Momomoto.
Okay.
Yeah, who swallowed Mr. Momomoto in the summer of 44.
What that is with the Principia Discordia, Greg Hill basically, it was a collaboration between a lot of people. Robert Anton Wilson, Robert Shea, they have stuff there. Camden Benares, Kerry Thornley. It was all stuff they were sending around to each other in the mail, and Greg Hill pulled together the Principia Discordia from this with a little, you know, a piece of the Epistles to the Paranoid or something Wilson wrote. But then he'd also put a stamp on there, or, like that thing about Mosumoto is something he cut out of or took from some other place and added to the Principia. So it's just like a collage and a collaboration of a lot of different ideas coming together. So you'll have, on one page, you'll have maybe 3 different thoughts that are pieces of artwork that intersect. It's a cool book, the Principia Discordia. When I first came across it, I didn't know quite what to make, and it didn't leave an impression on me at the time. I just thought it was, but you know, the more I've been exposed over the years, I understand what they were doing. And within the Discordian archives, I probably told you this before, we discovered the actual paste up pages to the Principia Discordia that show how Greg Hill put the whole thing together. It's pretty amazing. We're working with Groucho Gandhi on a book project. Eventually, be nice if we could display some of this stuff because it's, you know, great artwork, and Greg Hill was very good at putting collages together and did, you know, that was a unique skill to put these paste-ups together and create.
Yeah.
It was an early form. It was a big influence on the zine culture.
Right.
In the 80s, and a lot of those people, you know, like Mike Gunderloy with Fact Sheet 5, and they all understood that a lot of this came from the Discordians and the Principia Discordia, how that really influenced a lot of the early zine movement and how they people put, you know, those zines together.
Yeah, because a lot of them were done on, the first ones really were done with just pasting stuff up like old newspaper layouts.
And that's a skill Greg had. He was very good at that. It's kind of a lost skill nowadays. Back in the, it's weird to look at some of the stuff they were producing. And they, all the Discordians seemed to put out different newsletters, you know. So early form of zines. But it was much harder to do that back then. You didn't have all these Xerox, so you had to have some kind of connection. Greg Hill worked in different businesses. Like he was into word processing pretty early. He worked for like a legal firm and later Bank America. So he had access to copying machines and some of the early computer printing.
That's not a siren.
So he was able to do some of this stuff. And I lost my train of thought there. I was going
about Greg Hill working at Bank of America and having access to all the word processing and copiers. As soon as you said copiers, the first thing I thought of was the Garrison copier being used to print out the first few.
Well, yeah, that's...
Is that apocryphal?
You know what? I've written up a pretty long post on all of this. It's going to be on Historia Discordia, and I'm not copping out here, but it's so complicated, and I think I've figured out how this legend came about, and it's partly true and partly not true, and it's really hard to explain. But the legend is, yeah, that that the first edition of the Principia Discordia, which is printed in its entirety as a facsimile in the Historia Discordia, this first edition, which was missing for years and years, and I came across it in the archives, but the legend is it was printed on Garrison's Jim Garrison's copying machine or mimeograph machine after hours in 1965, which was before, of course, the Garrison investigation, because Thornley and Greg Hill had a friend there, a typist, in Garrison's office, and that's partly true and partly false. I think some of the Discordian materials were produced there, and it turns out the young lady who did this was named Lane Kaplinger, and she's the sister of Grace Kaplinger, who we now know nowadays as Grace Zabrinsky, who Laura Palmer, Laura Palmer's mother in Twin Peaks, and she'll probably be
the one that yelled a lot.
Yeah, and she was good friends with Carrie Thornley, so I got a lot of insight and stories from her for all the books, really. The different, and it's kind of a Discordian trilogy I've written with The Prankster and the Conspiracy, Historia Discordian, this latest one. Caught in the Crossfire, Carrie Thornley, Lee Oswald, and the Garrison Investigation.
Ah.
But anyway, yeah, we can talk about other things, too.
Yeah, well, I lost my train of thought anyway. People can also write in if they've got more questions.
It's nice to plug that a little bit. I usually like to plug the latest book. Am I not okay?
You should talk. You have to talk directly. I can hear, because I've been here so long, if I can hear when something is kind of down a little bit, I'm like, yeah, your level's slightly lower than me. And I don't want to be that much higher on the up above the guest. Anyway.
So, yeah, those are the Discordian books, if people are into that. And I'll actually be on, I'm not sure if that's live tomorrow, I'm going to be on that web television show. It's called Antidote that Michael Parker hosts. And I'll bring those books and we'll talk a little bit about Discordianism. And what else? He wants to talk about Happy Trails to High Weirdness, but yeah, so that's the latest book, so I always like to give a plug for the latest thing that's been published, and that's, and really it's not a book. The approach wasn't to try to solve the Kennedy assassination in any way.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about. It's about Carrie Thornley and how he was targeted by the Garrison investigation, the whole three-ring circus that evolved out of that whole thing, you know. So it's looking at that period of time and all the characters involved and how Thornley, unfortunately, got sucked into that whole affair.
What I'm doing right now is actually copying down everybody's guesses for the contest.
Mm-hmm.
And right as I was doing that, I thought of something. I remember once I was going to have you on to talk about, I think it was maybe Manson, and I've noticed after a while, it's like there's things you're actually kind of tired of talking about, and Manson was one of them. Is there any other things that you just like, I'm done with that shit?
Well, I don't tell people I'm done with it, but
I know what you mean. I mean, yeah, it's like somebody asked me about Bill Moore, and like I really don't want to talk about it, but, and then I'll answer the question.
Part of the thing is I've started writing that in the mid to late 90s, and so I had finished the first edition probably by about 1999 or 2000. Then it took another year for to get it published, and for the next several years I was talking about it all the time, and a lot of that stuff was fresh in my head, and I could, you know, just rattle out different things about it. But as time passed and I get into other things, you know, if I'm going to talk about Manson sometimes, you know, if it's like a network show or something, oh, I better go and, like, refresh my memory on a lot of this stuff. So a lot of it's just trying to pull a lot of that out of my memory banks. It's, you know, it doesn't come real easily anymore. And I'm not, yeah, quite frankly, I'm not that much interested, you know, because I spent so many years on it, you know. Then it got...
Yeah. Well, the thing is, people, like, read it for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's new to them. They're like, I want to know about this. It's like, half the time I got people asking me questions about something I wrote. I don't even remember writing whatever it is they're asking me about.
Well, I'll get posts sometimes. I appreciate people, of course, digging the book, but, you know, I'll get somebody who's friends me on Facebook. Oh, man, I love that book. Then I'll get they'll post something on my page, you know, that's like several paragraphs of stuff. It's like...
Yeah, I tend to erase stuff off my page. I'll read it. To be nice, actually, I'll leave it up for like a day, and then I hit hide or delete.
But
especially if it's an ad for somebody something. Here's my new book. It's like, why are you putting that on my personal page? I'm not a billboard.
But, yeah, I think some people have the expectation that, yeah, we'll get into a big dialogue about Manson, but the truth of the matter, yeah, I'm not that interested in it anymore. Moved on to, you know,
I was
going to
try and ask you
stuff.
An annoying question about Manson.
Oh, so yeah, I'll still do Manson interviews, and it'll, you know, there'll be that big question. Well, why is Manson still so popular? Or what was really going on? Fuck, I don't know. I don't have the answers to what motivate him. There's all kinds of theories there. And that's what
you
I try.
You might as well ask why anybody's popular, really.
Yeah.
You know, why?
Now, the reason I wrote that book, and I was really into it at the...
Why is Lindsay Lohan popular? Oh, wait, no, she's part of the Illuminati conspiracy. Okay, never mind.
But, yeah, there was all these conspiracies about Manson that, you know, there was the Mabe Russell stuff, the military mind control experiments.
Right.
Then there was this satanic angle, and there was all the connections he had to Hollywood and rock music. So that's what intrigued me about it, and I was basically, you know, like... The reason you write a lot of books or interview people or whatever, you just have a curiosity about the stuff. So that's how I started down that.
Why did the zines, a lot of zines start? Why did I start, you know, zine with Robert and Peter there? It's like, well, because I want to learn stuff. Why do you write your stuff? Why did you have your radio show, which I guess is coming back? Why?
Who gave you that idea?
I don't know. I thought I read that somewhere. It isn't? Okay. Nah. Anyway, but any of us do these things, anybody does any of these shows, you would hope that the reason is they're trying to learn something. Because I would read a book, or I'd hear about somebody, and I'd see their shtick, and there's questions you want to ask them. And so, you know, over the course of years, you get to the point where you can zero in on, like, certain questions and that people will be interested to answer you instead of just, like, come up and say, I really like that book. Well, how did you know about that? Or something like that. People like really specific questions.
Yeah.
And I have specific questions. I know you do too. When you interview people for your books and whatever, because you have to get to the point very quickly.
With the whole zine thing,
this is how I met Gorightly.
Yeah,
he wrote me asking. I think you asked if you could have something in the zine in Excluded Middle.
I think I probably had contact first with
Wes.
No.
No?
Well, maybe with Wes before that, but Robert Larson contacted me.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I think he contacted me first, but...
Robert Larson's like one of those unknown like people out of the zine revolution that nobody talks about that knew a lot of people, made connections with people.
The reason what caught my interest, one of the things with the zines was, I was, you know, interested in conspiracies, psychedelics, UFOs, how all these things overlapped, you know, and... I saw, in fact, Sheet 5, which was the...
the Bible of the zine revolution.
Yeah, it reviewed all the hundreds of zines bi-monthly or whatever, and so...
Yeah. I was so excited when I got in there.
Yeah, so I was interested in conspiracies and other stuff, and I saw... I think it was... I had some stuff like in Steam Shovel Press. Ken was just starting then, but I saw Crash Collusion listed, and it was like psychedelics, conspiracies, and... thought, well, okay, these guys are into the shit I am. And, yeah, so started writing for West Nation there, who passed away recently.
Yes.
Sad deal.
Yes.
And you were already you knew Wes at that time, and you guys, so.
And Miles.
Yeah. So, yeah, that all evolved. But, it was just some shared interest. I think it was like the hip kids. getting into conspiracies and UFOs during this time, but we're also from, you know, the period where we were into Robert Anton Wilson and psychedelic drugs, and so it was kind of like a new wave of people coming into the paranormal UFO or different perspective, you know.
And they'd all had kind of the same background of, like, I came straight out of, like, Robert Anton Wilson and everybody he wrote about, and, you know, Kiel and Valet and all the old UFO books, magazines, all that. All that stuff was burbling around in my head.
And I think I got a lot of, you know, I was introduced to a lot of that stuff from you guys, so.
I had, like, read some Wilson, but then after I started, we started writing to each other, and I didn't even think we had internet at the time. It was right before internet.
Oh, I think internet had just started, so some of us were doing emails, but yeah, a lot of it was writing letters. Yeah, I remember getting letters from,
You know, did you ever get that letter from Dave Reimer that had the stamp on it? Remember the stamp?
I saw that. I don't think I got one, but tell your listening audience, I saw the stamp itself when he and Wes were living in Berkeley.
Yeah. I went and visited them in Berkeley, and Wes had he had two peyote cactuses growing in, maybe growing, who knows if they were dead or not, growing in a window in clay pots in the window, like planter pots. And somebody had sent him, I'll get to it, but somebody also, a fan of the magazine, had sent him a Sonoran desert toad.
Mm-hmm.
It was sitting in a little glass case in his place.
He also told me, you remember Tom...
That is the psychedelic toad, if you didn't know.
Remember Tom Lytle?
Yes.
Tom Little?
Lyttle.
Yeah, he published psychedelic monograms and essays. Is that...
I think so, yeah.
He was one of those characters. He had all kinds of wild stories, but Wes told me one time... I think there was a period of time where... I think the pronunciation is Little, where he was sending out... paper acid to people, and Wes got, and he was afraid to.
Oh, you mean sending it in the mail?
Yeah,
yeah. I think I'd heard about that, and no, you know what? I stole that from his Principia mm-hmm. Discordia. The remember when we had the, and we'll get to the stamps thing in a minute. But remember when we had the fortune cookie things on the back cover, and it was like, you know. What I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Tibet is ours. Give it up. The People's Republic of China. Noodle Company.
Yeah. A bunch of different fortune cookies. I had a submission.
I had everybody for submission. And there are a lot of really good ones. And one I stole from Discordianism was, you got the lucky fortune, put on tongue and lie down.
Yeah.
Because in the book it says, lick this spot or something. You got the lucky book or something. Lick this spot and lie down.
And they might have dropped some acid on some of their books. They were all into that. So it's possible.
What our friend Dave did one time is I got a letter from him in the mail. And I can't remember what the letter was. Maybe it's like an invitation to... It was probably an invitation to Burning Man or something in 96. And what he had done was, you know, they have those love stamps with the hearts on them or whatever. He made a heart. He made a alien head. And it was an alien, like this typical gray alien head with the, you know, the buggy eyes and the whole bit. And it said love next to us. And they got delivered.
Yeah, they sent...
they were canceled as stamp. He had, like, wrote the postage was on there, love, and a big alien head.
I bet, you know, sometimes government employees will be your friends, and they probably saw that and just laughed and run it on through. I like this guy's sense of humor. We're not going to hassle him for... Probably could have gotten in big trouble, too. Wes... he worked for Kinko's quite a bit. He was like a manager, and so that's how he was. That aided him in publishing Crash Collusion. He told me him and Dave had this thing. They used to have these campaigns now and then, or promotions where they give them buttons, and it was like, ask me about this. Or so they made up some buttons that said things like, ask me about my dick. Or so they had fun with it.
Yeah, well, they had, what is it? Yeah, they gave him buttons that said, Kinko's your branch office.
Uh-huh.
And right after the Koresh thing happened, they made up buttons that said, Kinko's your branch Davidians.
Of course, Wes eventually.
And of course, the Davidians was like all scrawled and horrible looking, and the other part was the official part.
And, yeah, he hated that corporate working for those. And eventually, the last 5 or so years of his life, he did what he wanted to do. And he
wandered the earth.
Yeah, and has the blog. And I think they're going to bring that back.
Johnny Vagabond.
Vagabond traveled all over this. I think somewhere I read where he wanted a certain amount of money, you know, like $10,000. And he got to the point like, screw it. Whatever money I have, a couple thousand dollars, I'm just going for it. You know, I might never have the chance. So he went for it and was a vagabond.
Yeah. Steve Ray sent his siren guest. These are all bunching up. It's going to be kind of hard to tell who's... what's the falsest rumor about Discordianism? Well, I think we went through a few of them.
Well, I could give you all kinds of silly answers. The falsest rumor. Well, the Discordians have made up rumors about themselves, you know, like there was one internet when the internet in the mid-90s, these stories got out about the Discordianism was the most dangerous cult and needed to be stamped out and all of this stuff, and it was probably the Discordians who started that, but it's all rumors. Nothing's true. Everything's true, though.
Lance Moody asks, my question, have you ever played INWO? Whatever. Do you know what that means? It's an abbreviation.
INWO.
Well, Lance, I don't know what INWO is. We're not the cool kids no more, so we don't know. He'll answer me in a second.
Yeah, I saw Lance, he was making a film about contactees, and he...
No, that's Patrick Connolly.
Well, I think Lance maybe can correct us, but he originally began making a film about contactees, and that's where his interview with Jim Moseley came from, which is a great interview he filmed of Moseley by that bridge in Point Pleasant, the Silver Bridge.
Okay.
It's like a 20-25 minute interview of Moseley talking about the golden days of ufology. Really cool.
Lance says, Illuminati New World Order. That's a game?
Oh, well, there's the card game of the Illuminati that Steven Jackson Game put out, which has been out different iterations over the last 20 years. The Illuminati card game, I guess, is what he's talking about.
Oh, okay. I guess not, then.
He says no?
No. He was asking if you did. He says, yes, that's it.
I haven't played it, but I have some of the cards, which are really cool. And you can get on the web and look
download up new ones?
Well, you can see the cards themselves. People have posted them, and they say that what's the predictive programming is in some of the cards, because there's like one of the card apparently is like the Twin Towers, you know, on fire. And so... some, you know, conspiracy theorists suggest that there was a lot of predictive programming going on with that card deck. And there's Discordians in one of the cards. They have Discordians.
Yeah, Lance, you just said you can play as the Discordians.
Yeah.
It sounds like something that Wilson would have made
out. Well, you know, when they...
because he sort of had that game at conferences he would do.
There was an issue there with that Illuminati card deck. Wilson was kind of pissed off when they came out with that, because he thought, oh, they're ripping me off. And he went talk to a... I think he might even talk to a lawyer or something. His lawyer said, hey, this is probably good for more publicity, you know, then there's, don't worry about it. It's not worth getting your panties in a twist about. It'll probably bring, you know, more readers to the Illuminatus trilogy.
Yeah. You fed me this beer, and now I'm blanking out. Damn you, Adam Gorightly. It's good beer, too. It's Negro Modelo. How'd you like the Mexican food?
Oh, that was excellent.
Made by, I think it's...
Made by real Mexicans?
All food in L.A. is made by real Mexicans.
They do all the work here.
They do.
The place
all
would crumble without...
Well, you know that... yeah, totally changed the subject. Anthony Bourdain's, like, at Les Halles, his restaurant in New York, that he, you know, basically said, okay, I'm going to go off and be a travel writer. The guy that he designated as his successor, I think his name is Carlos something. He was from Mexico City, and he was an illegal immigrant, and... you know, he later became legal and all that, but yeah, he said the entire, and I think he said this, I think in his book, he said, if you're going to own a restaurant, learn to speak Spanish.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like...
Because the only people that are going to work their butts off in a sweaty kitchen like that are immigrants.
Because of the
low pay, just to keep the prices down for the food, especially in a place like Los Angeles. Maybe not so much in other areas of the country, but especially in big cities. So if you go to a Mexican food place in Los Angeles, there is absolutely zero doubt that they're Hispanic. Any, you know, El Salvador or whatever, the people from that country are making that food.
Well, it's kind of like that all.
But then you also go to
through,
like a...
All
like
through
a,
California, you
yeah. $100 a plate place. There's also Hispanic people in the kitchen making that food for the most part. I've gone and looked in those kitchens because I just want to see. It's like, what goes on in the kitchen? I kind of peek and it's like all these Hispanic guys making food.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a couple other people. You know, then there'll be like, you know, people that are just out of CIA, Culinary Institute of America or, you know... Cordon Bleu or something like that, and they're in there working too. But yeah, the by and large, it's mostly. Oh, Steve Ray is posting some of the images of the cards on the Mariotti Mysterioso Facebook site. Thanks, Steve.
You weren't familiar with those, Greg?
No.
Oh yeah, yeah.
My favorite.
Well, it's from Steve Jackson Games, and Steve Jackson Games also did a iteration of the Principia Discordia, which even made it more popular. So he's a Discordian. There's, you know, he's developed, produced a lot of different games and video, whatever.
I can't do role playing games.
I've never done any of that. Yeah, Robert,
I've done it and I get bored in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
No, well, you pull this card, you have to do this thing, and then you have this weapon, and it's like, oh,
it's not for me.
I don't care. My brain just doesn't work that way.
People who are into Dungeons and Dragons are going to Renaissance fairs and taking on those roles.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you can generalize that much, but yeah, that kind of thing. I've never been to a Renaissance fair, and I don't care if I ever go. I want to see a bunch of smelly hippies dressed up and selling me subpar food.
And
I'm just alienated like half the audience.
And affecting overblown accents, you know. That.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry, not half the audience. I give the audience of this show much more credit than that. At least the credit to not be offended when I say something stupid
See how many listeners you lose. You like three drop off when we started.
I am not going to look at the listeners right now because I want to make sure this is recording. Because here's a bit of information nobody cares about. I forgot the key to the station today. So we had to go get the key, which is why we were late, and borrow it from Bennett. Whose show is on Friday nights at 10, I believe, Bennett. I'm trying to see on the schedule. Bennett shows a chill room, but I'm trying to find it on the schedule there. I believe, yeah, it may be 8 or 10 to like midnight. I think it's 8 to midnight. Really good music show. We had to borrow Bennett's keys to get in here, and I totally forgot where I was going with that. Oh yeah, because I forgot my keys, and I can't record the show, so I'm using the station's recorder. So if it doesn't record, we're kind of screwed, unless Miles or somebody's recording for us. Yeah, because I left the house. It's being termite tented, so it's full of poison right now, and I can't go in there until tomorrow morning. So Go Rightly is in the studio, and I should go back to talking to him. Hey, what was the first thing you wrote that got published? Where was it published?
It was poetry.
Okay.
And I'd have to think. Oh God, I couldn't even tell you the little magazine that, you know, is like a zine back in the early 80s. Oh, there was some. Ah, boy, this gets crazy.
Good. I'm glad I asked it. See.
This wasn't the first step. Yeah, I was writing. See, I got, you know, my friend Joe, they had a band, and I wrote lyrics back when I was like 17 or 18, just tons of lyrics, and some was
when
like...
When you were a dude from the 70s?
Yeah, some was like sword and sorcery stuff and whatever, Black Sabbath type things. That was pretty... And so I started dabbling in poetry, too, so you'd go to the writer's market and these different things and find out... Poetry magazines.
Yeah.
A lot of times they didn't pay anything. But so it was in one of those that a poem was published. But then I also heard about this. I did a post on this too, trying to remember. The magazine was called Blood Drake or Blood Rake.
That's amazing.
Do you know about this?
No. And it's just like, that's such a great name for a magazine. You know, when they thought it up, they went, yeah.
Well, it was just this one dude.
And his when name, he thought it up, he went, yeah, that's it.
And his name was Philip Schuth. And I wrote...
Never heard of him.
I kind of wrote the dark poetry, some of it about occult themes. That's what the his zine was about. And this was like in the early 90s. And he also had Sword and Sorcery.
You're not boring me. It's just I didn't get him sleep.
Horror stories, poetry of this nature. And this guy paid money. I mean, like so many cents a line or whatever. So I'd send a few poems and he liked them and get, you know, $8 back in the mill or whatever. And so I published some stuff and he had artwork, you know. It was obviously a one-man job, but it was a pretty decent thing. But it also had kind of a, I don't know, it was kind of an odd magazine. He seemed like an antisocial type filler. Some of the letters, things he'd write, the little editorial stuff. And so years later, I had a copy of one of these Blood Rakes, and I probably appeared in a couple. And there's a post somewhere on my Untamed Dimensions blog about all this, but I wanted to get to the copies of that zine that I didn't have. And so, you know, you start looking like in different places, and I found some that I was able to purchase. I don't know if I got all the copies, but I started searching this guy, Philip Schuth. And as it turns out, there was kind of a weird story about him where he got arrested. His mom had been dead in their cellar for she'd been missing for several months, and they finally discovered that. And I think he got locked up. He might have killed her. I forget all the details of it, though. But if you look up Philip Schuth, you might... Anyway, it's just kind of a weird thing. This was the dude who was sending me dollar bills in the mail, and he was just some shut-in weird guy who was in into horror stories and sword and sorcery and that type of stuff.
Blood Rake,
yeah. I still have some of the copies. And there's a post on Untamed Dimensions. If you probably put in Go Rightly, Untamed Dimensions, Blood Rake, it'd probably bring up the post about this guy, and that this was probably 5 or 6 years ago. You know, you do a Google search, Philip Schuth, and it's like, killed mother or something. Yeah. It's like, whoa. Okay.
What is it with you? You're writing about Manson, Philip Schuth. You got me in touch with Ira Einhorn.
You know, you make all these... that's part of the deal when you get into looking at this stuff. You need to network and make connections. And the dude who gave me Einhorn's email, and this Einhorn was in France at this time.
Yeah, because they found him because of America's Most Wanted. But I don't know how they found him in France using America's Most Wanted. But
this was before he had done any media, before he really came out, so probably 97 or so.
Yeah.
And the guy who gave me his address is somebody who's still friends on Facebook. And in fact, a couple of years ago, he said, hey, remember me? Oh, yeah, I remember you. It's a guy named Steve. I won't give his last name, but he lives out in the desert here somewhere, and he sold books. So I used to trade books with him quite a bit, and at one time, he knew I was into weird crap. He said, hey, Einhorn,
by the way,
Einhorn was one of his customers, and would you like to have his email address? Because I had written something about Philip K. Dick and Ira Einhorn. They had a correspondence. So that's how all that started.
Oh, okay.
I emailed him, and we did that interview for Excluded Middle.
Right.
Yeah.
That was kind of crazy.
There was some weird shit that went on with that, and I think it's one of the real instances where I was being my email was being monitored.
Right.
Because there was communications, you know, we were emailing back and forth, doing the interview. Then I'd get these emails back with, part of our conversation excerpted into the email, the body of the email. But it wasn't from Einhorn. It was somebody who was monitoring us, and it was just sent to me to say, hey.
By the way.
We're watching your communications with this guy.
Yeah.
What can you do?
I don't remember ever getting anything like that associated with him, so they didn't I wasn't bothered about it. If somebody was reading the emails between him and me, I didn't know.
This was a little before he started doing the media stuff. And you interviewed him. No, he was in France when you interviewed him.
Yeah, I called him in France. I used a calling, like a world calling card, and called him from the Kill Radio studio up there in the Davidian building where Ed Wood used to have an office. I might have been calling Ira Ironhorn from Ed Wood's office, and people keep asking me to post that interview, and I think I have it. I'm pretty sure I have a file of it, because I just pulled it off the tape. And during the interview, every time I ask him about the murder and Holly Maddox, mm-hmm. he changes the subject every single time. He just will not answer any questions.
Yeah, he would dance around it. He'd make hints about things that maybe the CIA or whatever, you know. But and, of course, he had an out that, my lawyers don't want me to talk about.
He didn't say anything about lawyers. He would dodge the question. And at one point, I think I asked him a specific question. It might not even been about that. And he like completely changed.
Well,
he answered the question he wanted to answer. Yeah. And you can hear me throw the phone across the room.
He was one of those guys. Yeah, he would steer the conversation his direction, and he'd go off. And it's like, okay, whatever.
He's good at it. He's a real NLP kind of guy.
He was heavy into ufology.
Was he?
Yeah, I'm sure you're aware of this. First with, he was part of the scene at Andrea Puharik's.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Had that farm or compound where they were.
In New Hampshire, or it was on the East Coast.
Somewhere on the East Coast.
Upper, and New England.
It was one of those places where the thing was, they were having all these weird experiences there.
Geller was there for quite a while.
And Einhorn was right in the middle of that. And he was a networker getting information out about Tesla and these different suppressed technologies back in the day. And he was funded by people at AT&T. So he's kind of... And according to...
Because he did technology stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't just, like, weird, suppressed stuff. It was also new science and new... He was kind of like a one-person zine.
And it was
like a nexus.
Early bulletin boards or setting up telephone networks to pass that information.
Right,
so it's
okay,
the 70s. And so he's involved in that, and according to Einhorn, I don't doubt him, he helped edit Messengers of Deception by Vallée. And then I've seen other little things here and there, like Holly Maddox, his girlfriend that was murdered. She was involved in ufology, too, and I've seen some drawings she did of different UFOs and type of things. So he was heavily into all of that. And,
You gave me his email. We interviewed him by email, and then I also wrote him. And I emailed him and I said, I also talked to him on the phone a couple of times. And he said, can we get a picture of you can we get a picture of you for the magazine? And he said, why don't you just send me some film? So I sent him some like Kodak Tri-X, black and white film. He took pictures of himself, put it back in the mail and sent it back to me. And that's what I said, could you get a picture of yourself reading the magazine? And he actually took a copy of The Excluded Middle, held it up and read it, and had his girlfriend over there take a picture of him. So I got all that. I remember my wife at the time was very upset with me. She said, why are you talking to this guy? He's a murderer.
Wife wasn't cool.
I said, you might as well ask any journalist that's talking to somebody that's accused of a crime why they're talking to them. We're talking to them because it's a newsworthy thing. Also, it's very interesting. I'm talking to some guy that's been out of circulation. You found him. Out of circulation for a long time, was into the same stuff I am, and has some degree of notoriety. I'm not supporting him. I didn't say he didn't do it. I never said anything like that. I just interviewed you and I interviewed him.
Yeah, for people who aren't familiar, there's a book called... what's the book on Einhorn called? The Unicorn
Secret.
Yeah. Great book if you want to find out more. Because... Just an amazing story. After this was a guy who he was one of the founders of Earth Day, and he was into all this other stuff. He was part of the counterculture.
Yeah, every time Earth Day comes around, I think I
rubbed elbows with Abbie Hoffman and all these people. Then all of a sudden, the murder goes down of his girlfriend, which he denied. She found in a steamer trunk in his apartment in Philadelphia. Then
back porch of his apartment, and he said he didn't have anything to do with it and didn't know it was there.
Hinted CIA might have been involved. He might have been, who knows. and was represented by Arlen Specter, the guy who came up with the single bullet, or the whatever you call it, the single bullet theory.
The magic bullet theory.
Magic bullet. And then he goes on a limb. He splits. He had people funding him.
Yeah. Who was it? The Canadian, the rich Canadian family.
Rich heiresses and these types, you know. Yes. And so he's gone. And in that book they talked about, at one point they had tracked him. He was living in Ireland under a different name, you know, and they were hot on his trail. But that's where the trail ended when the book was published, like in 87. And it wasn't until like the late 90s where he reemerged.
Yeah.
And I was in contact with him in France. And then I think our interview was before. Then his big interview came out in Vanity Fair, and it started the whole thing about the extradition process. And
with the naked pictures of him. Very strange.
And he tried to. And he didn't think he'd ever get extradited, but eventually he did and came back to stand trial and was found guilty. Now he's in prison somewhere.
Yeah, well, he was in Houtsville prison, or prison in Houtsville, because I remember writing to him there. Then he got very strange with me and tried. He got like very mind control-y guru with me, and I stopped corresponding with him at that point. I sent him a bunch of books. He requested all these books. I was like, well, he's in prison. I'll send him some books. At this point, probably my wife had more.
That led to your.
Yes. No, not really. I mean, it's a lot of other things. But I did send him a shipment of books to the prison. And they won't let you send used books. It had to be all new books. It cost me like $180 for these damn books. And I sent them to him, and then he asked for more. And at that point, I just said, nope, I am not talking to him anymore.
What's the thinking about they have to be new books? What's up with that?
I guess they are ways of passing messages or hiding things in the book or in the bindings or whatever. Who knows?
Hmm.
Okay. So that's why that rule was, you know, can I send you a cake maybe? So that was a very strange period. And then Donna Cossey's husband, Ken, did the illustration for the front cover. He basically read the interview and did this great illustration of Einhorn kind of standing in the middle of a room with these like green flames around him and these like black cloaked, like secret agent looking people sneaking by in front of him. And he said, if you looked really closely, he had a Ubu Ra symbol on his stomach. So he looked like Ubu Ra and from the play. The absurdist play.
It was cool.
So and I think that was the last issue of The Excluded Middle. It was issue 9.
Yeah, the interview ran in your last issue, then in your,
in the book.
Yeah, the book. And yeah. I'm not sure if half of the interview ran in the magazine or the whole interview ran in
I think both of them
or what the deal was.
I think most of the, I think they were the same, but if anything, the interview in the book was more complete. There was that interview with Dean Radin I published in the magazine, the parapsychologist. The one in the magazine was probably the longest one I've ever published in the magazine. But for the book, I included the entire interview. It ran for 25 pages. It runs for 25 pages.
I remember
pages
that.
Because I thought it was important. It affected my thinking and my life enough that it's like, I'm going to put the whole thing in here. Maybe it'll affect somebody else that way.
Some of the Einhorn stuff, he was going off on all this, how wonderful he was and what his ideas for the environment, you know, but I...
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, so, but, you know, ended up running the thing in total just because that was probably kind of the agreement, you know, but so a lot of it seems like just at least half of it's kind of this tis whatever agenda fluffy crap, you know. I tried to steer him more to the paranormal stuff he was involved with Puharik and... tried to talk some about the murder and CIA and this type of stuff. So probably 30% of the interview is that. And 40% is bullshit. But, yeah, it's... I mean,
you know who's... Has anybody ever written a biography of Puharik? I don't think so. They should. Absolutely fascinating character.
Mm-hmm. It's tough when they're dead, you know.
Yes. Well, that hasn't stopped a lot of people from writing biographies of lots of people. But he was a fascinating character, and he was involved with so many strange people. And the weird thing is, I mean, the guy would make a perfect character, like a mad scientist character. I think he invented, God, what did he do? He was like a physicist, an electronics engineer. He invented like this amazing hearing aid, I think, that was like this revolutionary thing when he did in the 50s. And then he wrote a book called The Magic Mushroom.
Crazy book, yeah.
He wrote a book about, and
The Sacred Mushroom.
Sacred Mushroom, I'm sorry, The Sacred Mushroom. Why would somebody that was into, you know, that could invent a new hearing aid be into the sacred mushroom? But he wrote a whole book about it. He was very much into it. He kind of seeded the popular culture with it, or at least the people he knew about it.
There's some weird...
And he's on that episode of One Step Beyond talking about it.
Yeah, he was on early...
You can look it up on YouTube.
That's a very strange book. It was Animita Muscaria, if I'm saying that.
Yes, it was not about psilocybe cubensis. It was about Amanita,
Puharic shows up very early in ufology, in the contactee scene.
I don't remember that connection. What was it?
There's a strange story.
I know you're right. I remember this sort of, but I don't remember the
one of it has to do with when prophecy fails, the names of the people. There's the doctor. Remember Dr. Doom? Laughhead.
Laughead. And his wife.
Yeah. So they were part of that scene there. And
was that like, Puharic?
Oh, not yet.
Okay.
It gets there.
Yeah, I thought so. It really was a doctor, whatever, Laughhead. Yeah. And Charles and Lillian or something like that.
Yeah, and he got in trouble with the administration. He was like a medical doctor and was on the staff at a university in Chicago, and he started proselytizing about UFOs. That's why they gave him the boot. And he actually spoke at Giant Rock one year, I think, like in 56. So he was part of that scene, and he knew Adamski, and he was getting into that. And the connection is Lawhead, however you say his name, he and his wife, after the when Prophecy Fails doodah went down, and a bunch of them went to Peru with George Hunt Williamson.
Really? Okay. Doing his grave robbing?
And the lady who was the prophet for the
one that was named Dorothy Keach, but she had some other real name.
I think her name's Martin.
Yeah, it was Dorothy Martin, right?
Yeah, that's probably right. So either coming or going, the Lawheads were in Mexico, and they run into Puharic, who was there with a channeler, that Vinod guy who was channeling the aliens. And the Lawhead said something to Puharic at that time that became true regarding the Nine, and there'll be an appearance of this group, the Nine, here. And a year later, Vinod, had these communications with the Nine. So there's those connections. And Lawhead and his wife, they were in Peru for a period of time with George Hunt Williamson and Dorothy Martin. Apparently that whole thing went to shit. They were trying to set up some type of commune there.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And then I think Williamson ended up like doing a very much reduced version of it in Long Beach, Southern California, somewhere. He was doing that when he died.
So Puharic very early was in on that. Then Uri Geller in the 70s.
This dude from the 70s.
Yeah, dude from the 70s. I mean, it was a continuation of that thing.
Yeah.
Contactee scene. It was, the 70s, a little more hipper or different things. So, Puharic has all these weird connections with all these
things. There was this weird,
things.
Like, opening up of things in the 70s, and it kind of slammed shut, like, after the Reagan era, it seemed like. There's a lot of cross-pollination then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, would you have Russell Targ and I can't remember the other guy. Sorry. Hal Putoff and Russell Targ. I don't think they would be getting any funding or anything, except maybe just recently, to do any research into remote viewing. At the time and the place that they did, that was everything was ripe for that to happen.
Yeah, there was connections with, I mean, I just need to talk into it, have my mouth right against
this
thing.
Yeah, I think we should just tape the microphone to your face.
But yeah, Wilson and Leary, they were into a bunch of things of that nature, and they knew that bunch. And yeah, there was a lot of cross-pollination going on. And a lot of supposed E.T. contact with all those guys. Wilson had his experience. I've talked about this and wrote about
the Sirius thing.
Yeah, at the same time, Philip K. Dick had. And all these psychedelic people, John Lilly was having communications with whoever the common thread.
And some of them were not on psychedelics when this was happening.
Yeah, but it contributed. Terrence McKenna, really, his initial experiences were during the same time, like 72, 73. When I did that thing.
Really? Okay.
Oh, there's more.
When he was down in the Amazon and saw the Adamski saucer and the whole bit? Okay, yeah.
There's a number of others. So, and I looked, that was part of that presentation I did on the UFO contactees. There was a website called temporaldoorway.com, which isn't there anymore, but I still have the graph, and it showed peak periods of UFO sightings or weird stuff going on, and that was one of the those peak times was like 72 or 73, 74.
Okay.
You know, and you look back on the chart in like 1952, that's where you hear all the contactee stories. That was a peak. 67.
Oh, you spoke about this at Roswell.
Yeah. 67, the Summer of Love, there was another peak. I had my own psychedelic experience in like 78, and that was like a peak period. So, yeah, my theory was, yeah, if you psychedelics help put you in that state of mind, the trance state, with the same place the contactees were going. And if you're in a UFO doorway or window and all these things together, there's a possibility of all of this coming together. And
of apparent contact with non-human consciousness.
Yeah, whatever the hell it is.
Yes. And,
people, I don't know. A lot of people, it was weird. So we did that in Roswell thing, and a newspaper story came out while we were there in Roswell. It was kind of making fun of it, and one of the speakers it said was talking about, it mentioned my talk, were the early UFO contactees ritual magicians.
Yeah.
Just to make it sound crazy, and so there was that.
Well, it was crazy.
There
dude.
Was that panel where all of us were up there. I didn't talk. I think you said something. But the main stars,
I
you know,
got to say something.
Were Stephen Bassett, and he was, you know, the thing was revolving around him, and he brought out the newspaper article. See how they're not paying attention to disclosure, but they write about the crazy stuff like the ritual. And really, I think my theory
and
makes...
And Gorightly smiled quietly to himself.
My theory makes a whole lot more sense than anything. I actually got a call. Who's... there's like a national... hey, there's me. There's some woman, she has a national show. It's like similar to Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Somebody will probably post it up here.
I think she's still... I got it when I was... she called me when I was out there because I was in the Washington Post. And thank God I didn't answer. You know, they would have fucking made it. I'm sure they wanted to make a total fool out of me. I would have gone in there and said, I don't really necessarily believe or disbelieve this. You know, it's just kind of a theory and try to explain it to them. And,
they're not going to use that quote. They're going to use a quote that makes you sound like a total insane, you know. Oh, Jeremiah asked another question. It goes back to Manson. I have a friend from West Virginia, where Manson hails from, who says Manson is popular now because he really didn't do anything personally to be in prison for.
Yeah, there's that theory that he was a scapegoat that was part of some...
He says Manson's real crime was corrupting white youth, particularly girls.
Works for me.
What did you say? There was a theory that what?
Well, that's.
I mean, there's this weird like mind control thing, military thing, Scientology connection, stuff like that.
Yeah, and I don't. know how deep we want to get into West Virginia, but yeah, there's a whole big PSYOP thing going on there, and that's one of the breeding centers for MKUltra type patsies, and that was connected as well to the Mothman and all the weird stuff going on there.
Well, what about the weirdness? What about the weirdness in West Virginia?
It's weird, man.
I've been there once.
I've never been there. I've been to Virginia, never West Virginia, though.
Well, we went to not Point Pleasant, but Skylar and I went to Clarksburg.
The Gray Barker, whatever was there, museum?
The Gray Barker library. Room at the Clarksburg Library, run by a guy named David, I can't remember his last name. Houchin, I think, H-O-U-C-H-I-N. We got there right when they, 5 minutes before they were supposed to close. And we had driven, 4 hours from Baltimore to get there. So we get there and we're trying to find, we went straight to the, and we got there at 4:50 or something. And they closed at 5. So we go running around the library grounds looking for the, it's like finally we see one guy sitting at a desk is like, where's the Gray Barker room? Oh, it's right here. So, and then he let us stay there for 40. He let us stay there as long as we wanted and talked to us about everything and showed us the Vero edition of the.
I know what you're talking about.
Damn it. Flying Saucers and the Three Men. That's the one, right?
Okay. Well,
Jessup's book.
No, it's not. It's something else.
The Case for the UFO.
These guys are probably.
I think it's The Case for the UFO by Morris K. Jessup. Anyway, the one that was printed by the Vero Manufacturing Company in Texas and had the three colors of ink. He didn't even have an original anymore. He had a copy. I said, David, what happened to the original? He goes, we had two of them. They got stolen. That's why it's in a locked drawer. And I'm showing you the gloss copy we have left. Bill Moore had one that was just a copy. He did have one with the three colors, and he said that he, I think he lent it to somebody because they were going to do a facsimile facsimile printing of it, and that disappeared.
I know Tim Beckley came out with a version of it.
Yeah, did it have the colored ink in it?
I'll have to go back and look. I'm not sure if it had. Probably not, because he's printing stuff on the cheap. He says, let's go black and white.
Yeah, because I think this manufacturing company was actually a printing company or. Yeah, it had printing facilities, and some guys from the Navy had it printed. So, from Naval Intelligence or something like that had it printed.
Yeah, it's a weird story.
Yeah. Somebody ought to do it. I bet somebody has done a book. I was like, what's up with the Vero edition? Where did it come from? What was going on with it? Did Carlos Allende have anything to do with it, et cetera, et cetera? And maybe I'll ask Bill sometime if I talk to him again. He'll probably say, I don't know. I don't want to talk about that crap.
I heard there's a Jim Moseley interview he was talking about. Wasn't the guy's real name Carl Allen?
Yes.
And I guess Barker was
Carlos Allende. Yeah, Bill said he was absolutely 100% wacko bonkers.
Yeah, well, the phrase Moseley used was he was all but frothing at the mouth. Thought that was funny.
Yeah, Bill said he was driving, I think, through Colorado with Carl Allen one time. I'd like driving him back somewhere. He didn't have a car, so Bill Moore was giving him a ride after interviewing him for Philadelphia Experiment, I think. And he said there was a massive, huge lightning storm at the time, and he said, see, there's a Tesla technology. It's still working. Bill said, that's just regular lightning. You don't understand. That's coming from Colorado Springs where Tesla had his blah, blah. He went on this whole thing about Tesla. And how the lightning was a result of Tesla technology still being in use somewhere by the military or something. Crazy
Could
story.
Could be. Do you know any different?
Can you prove it didn't happen? I went to see my friends today up in the valley there, and coming back, I crossed Criswell Street. I think I'd go there. I have to go up there and steal one of those street signs. It's almost imperative.
We were talking about Marjorie Cameron.
Yes.
There's a heavy UFO connection there.
Please.
And I'm not going to. Most of your listeners know about Jack Parsons. This was his wife.
Yes.
And so the connections are, and a lot of these are legend, but immediately before, when she first went to the place they called the Parsonage, which is where they had
the house in Pasadena. A very large house, because he was making money as a rocket scientist.
That was the first part of the legend, that she saw a cigar-shaped UFO, and this was a sign to Parsons that she was the chosen one for the Babylon working.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Greg didn't know she lived in her later years, probably pretty close to you. I'll try to figure out what that was, on the same street.
Yeah.
Did you happen to go see the exhibit they did?
No, the one that was at the Pacific Design Center. Yeah, I heard about it, and we had a flyer for it, and we didn't. It's over now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have the
catalog or whatever.
Yeah, the catalog. Very cool. And so she had she lived for a period of time in Pioneertown.
What?
And she was friends with George Van Tassel, and she has some
NFW.
She has paintings where she was. There were a VT or alien entities. They're more like, it's kind of more like a multi-interdimensional thing, channeling thing, but she was into that, and yeah, there was a connection there with Van Tassel. She lived out there during that, you know, 50s period.
Really?
Yeah.
She go to the, she must have gone to some of the conventions.
There's somebody out there who's an artist guy that was her friend. He's still around, lives in that area, and he's the one who's saying he probably has more information about that.
Well, hot damn, let's go out there and visit him.
I could totally see it. She lived in Pioneertown. Of course she's going to go.
Yeah.
Check out Van Tassel.
Yeah, I wonder if there's one set of pictures from Life magazine of one of the conventions. I can't remember. Incredibly great pictures. I can't remember who the name of the photographer was. But there's pictures of, you know, Orfeo Angelucci and Van Tassel who's the guy, who's the woman, My Trip to Venus or whatever.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but everybody is in those pictures. Gabe Green. With mm-hmm. some, like, hot chick he was running around with. I don't know if it was
his wife.
That was
his wife.
Was it?
Yeah.
She's
nice
pretty cute.
Nice-looking lady, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I wonder if any of those pictures you can maybe see Marjorie Cameron in there, possibly.
Could
I got to take a look at him again. If you look up Life magazine, Giant Rock Convention, or UFO Convention.
I looked through some of those, and I think I might have noticed, because I was kind of aware of that a year ago. I know the ones you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're beautiful pictures. I mean, it's like, I can't believe there was a professional photographer from Life at a George Van Tassel Giant Rock Convention.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
This picture's some guy like doing some kind of dowsing thing and all these people crowding around and looking at his little dowsing.
Oh, yeah. Those are the type of pictures that come out. You go, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Glad somebody took them. Yeah, Life magazine or...
Yeah, I mean, the photographer did incredible work. You look up his stuff, and it's just, you know, it's Life magazine. The guy's got to be on top of his game. But, yeah, why would he go to an interplanetary spacecraft convention? I don't know. I'm not going to. You got a music request that might play on here?
Me?
Yeah, so I can go use a toity.
Let's see. Something that will last a few minutes. Is that...
Oh, I had like a...
you know what I like? I like Miserlou. You have some Miserlou versions that are pretty good.
Let me see if I got them on here, because this one sometimes doesn't play stuff when I search for it. There's one. Frankie Lane.
Oh, I love Frankie.
Desert shadows creep across purple sands. Natives kneel in prayer by their caravans. They're silhouetted under an eastern star. I see my long-lost blossom of Shalimar. Miserlou are the moon and the sun, fairest one. Old temple bells are calling across the sand. We'll find our kismet answering love's command. You are a dream of delight in the night. stars above. Heaven will guide us, Allah will bless our love. Ooh, Mizzou. El Oriente, la flor eres tú. Tu mirar este destello de inspiración. Que deje embelezado mi corazón. Cuánto dolor, si es que ingrata tú niegas mi amor. Juro nunca vengarme de tu traición. Aunque vive en el mundo sin corazón, you're mine, Miss Lou.
Can't hit those high notes. Here comes Go Rightly running back in here at full speed. But you know what? I want to hear a song that I found a few months ago, but I don't think I've played it on the show. And what was the name of it? The name of it was Little Men. I don't know where I got this from, but it's a pretty good UFO song.
In the bay, saw a spaceship land one day. It landed in a clump of trees. My hair stood up. I got a chill. My feet took off, man, against my will, and headed for the spot where it landed. I didn't take a drink all day. Well, maybe just a nip. But what I saw and heard would make any brave man flip. Six little people gathered round. This is what I heard.
Three more cats, Christmas night. A dusty hat, a big bucket. A three sound checks, a beer bucket. A splash and pop, a sure can stop. A beer can stop, a good man's rock. What's wrong?
My eyes are popping from their sockets. Of course I heard about moon rockets. But six head cats from outer space rocketed rolling all over the place. Six little men on a spree was something I never expected to see. As if by magic, the music stopped. Into the ship, the little men hopped. They took off like a silver streak. Left me feeling dazed and weak. The jigs took off before my eyes while I stood there hypnotized.
I'm speaking to you from the county jail.
Cause no one in town believes my tale. They say I had too many a sip. I keep insisting, just one nip. But six little men from the moon I saw. Six little men, not less or more.
Six little men, six little men, six little men, six little men.
That was Little Men by Tony Leiser, L-Y-Z-E-R. It is not on YouTube, it is not anywhere, and I can't remember where I got it.
Is there a year this was produced?
Don't know. Let me see if I can find any information on it. I just looked it up. I wanted to link it so people could hear it, but I've only got this recording. Tony Leiser, Little Men. Oh, Six Little Men, 1960.
Okay, I was thinking late 50s, maybe.
Yeah. Tony Leiser, Six Little Men, 1960. I'm going to have to change that in my list here because it's actually called Six Little Men, not just Little Men. And so whoever I pulled that from, whoever site I pulled that from, is not did not put the proper name down. Anyway, before that, I can't remember what I played.
Frankie Lane.
Yes, Frankie Lane playing...
Miserlou.
Singing Miserlou, but also he sang part of it in Spanish.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. That was interesting. I'm a big Frankie Lane fan. He was badass.
I like Frankie Lane. Didn't he have that... did he have an album of cowboy songs?
Oh, he did.
He did
Rawhide and... you name it, a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Ghost Riders in the Sky. And I love his version of Wayfaring Stranger. That's cool. Swamp Girl.
What?
You don't know Swamp Girl?
No.
Oh, we got to get it up there on YouTube and play Swamp Girl. While Greg, we're having dead air, he's like Googling.
No, here it is. When it loads.
Flies through the marshes and the turtles sun their shells where the water rat goes swimming. That's where my swamp girl dwells, where the sunlight never wanders.
Wow.
And the moonlight never fall, where the water's black.
It's like in the bayou, you know.
Yes, and there's a soprano in it.
That's where my swan girl calls. What did she say there, the girl with the golden hair, to make me follow her down there? How did she look when she took me by the hand?
You've never heard Swan Girl.
Tonight her hair will float in the water, and the gold will no longer shine. It will spread like a fan in the water, while she makes a mysterious sign. I have seen that sign before. Her eyes aren't like the whippoorwill, and her eyes aren't like the fawn. Her eyes are like the diamond bag stretching in the dawn. I have seen her face in the water and the chilling look in her eyes. And if you see her, then you must flee her. Never follow where disillusion lies. Or will you go to the girl with the golden hair down there where her work is done? Will you embrace the night and turn your back on the sun? She'll say it's better there in the water, where it's cool and calm and serene. She will call you to come to the water, to a world made of emerald green.
Hey,
I have
heard
that call before. I can hear it when I'm
It's like busy. A siren call.
Yeah. I can hear it when I'm in.
Hypnotizing
I can
him.
Hear it
I'm
when
hypnotized.
The joy of living seems to have lost its thrill. For my swamp girl lives inside of me, and she leaves me pale and warm. She dares me, she tears me, like paper dolls are torn. Calling, come to the deep where your sleep is without a dream.
Swamp Girl by Frankie Lane, 1960, what year was that? Looked like it said 1960.
That sounds about right. Fucking badass, huh?
Do you know what Carlos, our listener Carlos, said?
How would I know? How would I know?
I cannot believe that Frank, I forgot that Frankie Lane sang this song. You know which one it is? That's probably just music from the... music from the fanfare at the beginning. It's a film.
Carlos couldn't believe the Swamp Girl song?
No.
This song. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. He'd sing the theme to Rawhide, too, the television show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember he did this. It was funny. I think he was like a Jew kid from Brooklyn or something. Then he sang some country and western song. All of a sudden, he's in these country and western movies, you know?
When outlaws rule the west and fear filled the land, pride went up for a man with
man.
Take the west in hand. They needed a man.
Needs more. My man, they need more whips in this.
Justice for all as his aim. Out of the sun rode a man with a gun.
Man.
Bart was his name. Yes, Bart was his name. He rode a blazing saddle. He wore a shining star.
Oh, I guess he's talking about.
Yeah, he's talking about the Cleveland Little character, yeah. Amazing. Thanks, Carlos.
Listening to the Frankie Lane album.
Well, actually, Rawhide made me cry one time, and the reason was I was in a contest, a speed flying contest with a motor.
The song made you cry.
Yeah, I was in a speed flying contest with a motor, and you had to fly like 20 miles down the coast of the Salton Sea. Look at something, a little sign. That was Blazing Saddles, as sung by Frankie Lane from the 1974 movie
Blazing Saddles,
directed by Mel Brooks.
Starring Gene Wilder,
Cleveland Little,
Madeline Hahn, Harvey Korman.
That's right.
Who the hell? Mel Brooks had a role in it. Mongo by Alex Karras.
That's who Mongo was, yeah. Mongo just pawned in Big Game of Life. I flew, you know, as fast as I could up to this thing, looked at this little symbol because they had to know you actually made it up there. And I was flying back and listening to music in my headphones, and Rawhide came on. And I was I'm just hanging out like 1,000 feet above the ground.
Just hit you at the right time.
Just hit me at the right time. My legs were hanging down. I'm looking around at all the scenery, and Rawhide comes on. And I started singing with it, and I was so happy I started crying. Rawhide! You know.
It's like a freedom song.
Yeah, actually it was. Just the probably the music and the, not really the lyrics, because the lyrics are just the stupid for the TV show, but the music just hit me the right way at the right time, and I just freaked out.
Frankie Lane had a powerful voice. Maybe it was tugging at your heartstrings.
Yeah, Frankie was the master, man. There were no other comments about when the siren would happen, and I should have closed that off after the last guess. The last guess was 9:43 by Steve Ray. It is closed off now. So if we get a siren, we will stay till
We'll stay here till we get a
siren. No, we'll stay till 9:10 at least, just to make it an even 2 hours. If we get no sirens here, then nobody gets anything. But if we get a siren, then Steve Ray gets a signed copy of Historia Discordia.
Should figure out some other way if we.
Now he's going to call the fire department down and out.
wouldn't it figure you wouldn't get a fucking siren?
Yeah, it figures. Wow, he's on his third Negro Modelo. I've only had one, but I've had so much liquor today. I went to a mead tasting, believe it or not, with a bunch of mead geeks who brew mead.
The Poyawas.
Yes.
Jane and Jared Poyawa.
Yeah.
And they. They raise bees, or were they beekeepers?
Yeah, Jane is a beekeeper, so they use the honey from the bees to make the mead. And they made one with date syrup, and it was bloody incredible. I don't even like mead, and I like this.
Yeah, I can't drink a lot of that stuff, but the flavor is pretty nice.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a, I don't know, it's like a fruit wine or a... I mean, the honey is very obvious, and it's just really sweet.
It's
and punches
sweet,
you in the face.
And it has a syrupy type of.
No, it's not Well, the ones we had ranged all the way from sort of syrupy, light syrupy, down to just like wine consistency. And one of them was actually made with, I can't remember. He made it with Tupelo honey, which he said cost him a lot. He had to mail order it. This guy made it. And he fermented it. They use wine yeast to ferment it. Sometimes beer yeast, but usually wine yeast. Depending on how much they put in, what kind it is and all that, will determine how dry it is. And one of it was like champagne. Hmm. It was like this very light, very light yellow color, bubbly. It was in a CO2, I mean, a big pressurized canister to keep the carbonation. It was carbonated fermented mead. I mean, mead is fermented, but the carbonation had actually come out in the fermentation process.
And where did they hold this mead?
At a wine, beer, and cheese making shop up in Agoura Hills.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, there's about 100 people there, and as the afternoon wore on, people got a little bit louder, a little bit more prone to dance and sing, and also very honest about what they thought about the meads that were coming across.
Well, I think mead has a pretty high alcohol content. So.
It did. It's like it's higher than wine, I think, a little bit. It's like, what's wine hanging at, about 8 to 12% or something like that? These were in that range,
so, yeah,
maybe a little higher.
After a couple hours, it's like...
Yeah, I kept having to eat food, and then eventually I turned a cigarette and I said, I can see the headache coming down the road right now. I can see, it's way down the road, but it's coming. It's coming. So maybe I better back off for a little bit. So I was going to get a pounding headache. So, but we tasted like 8 or 10 different. You know, they'd pour you like, you know, maybe a few tablespoons of it, but you know, you drank like 10, 12, 15 different ones.
Yeah.
So it was good stuff. I mean, I didn't even like mead until I realized, except Jane and Jared's. They give us mead every couple of years or every year when they make it.
Oh, yeah, they gave me some a few years back. It was excellent.
Yeah.
Honey mead or whatever they had.
Well, it's made from honey, so it's all mead's made from honey. But
well, isn't? Okay, I didn't know that.
I believe that's part of the definition of mead. But then there's people would put flavorings in them. Most of the time they were putting like fruit. Extracts and fruit, they would just brew it with the fruit in there and then filter it out, filter all the, you know, all the impurities and the fruit solids and all that out and all the seeds, and you'd get this, like, there was raspberry mead, there was blueberry mead, there was peach mead.
There's a brew pub in Fresno that they make some batches of pomegranate mead.
Yes.
Which is excellent.
That sounds like it would be excellent. They had prickly pear mead there, but we weren't there late enough to taste that one. I wanted to try that one. I like prickly pear. I like, what are they? You can make a prickly pear margarita.
Mm.
Yeah, you can get prickly pear syrup. Now it's turned into a cooking show. foodie show. You can get prickly pear syrup from a supplier in Tucson. Actually, you can probably go online and find it in a lot of places, but yeah. Lemonade, margaritas, prickly pear fruit is really good in those things, especially margaritas. Well, everything is good in a margarita. Margarita. According to the clock on my computer, there are 2 more minutes for Steve Ray to win a copy of Historia Discordia signed
maybe,
by...
Maybe we can figure out some other way to give it away.
Okay.
How about like a... we could play a song and the first person to... what, guess the name of the song or something of that nature?
Okay, well, we got to give this 2 more minutes, though, according to my computer. I don't even know how many listeners we have left at this point. Some of our listeners listen from the East Coast, so the ungodly hour is 1:09 a.m. over there, and it's a school night, so... 10:10. The contest is over for guessing the siren because it did not happen. Now watch, it'll come by now. Do you want to write down a song and then I can look it up?
Well, is that the approach we want to take?
Sure, why not?
I know a song. Yeah.
And I will look it up here on YouTube and I hope it's there. But the title of that is...
Okay, you want me to... Be more obscure.
Yeah. The title of that is in the first line of the song.
So you have what? Somebody's paying attention.
I mean, it's right. This is the one he was proposing.
I'm just a dinky poodle. I'm just
this is not the song, by the way.
As stinky as can be. So furry and so fluffy.
This came up on my shuffle today. I haven't heard it in like probably months, maybe almost a year.
I'm George Jason Kitty.
Any other songs? Let me turn that down because otherwise you won't be able to think of another song. Want me to think of one?
Yeah.
Let's see if I can think. You know what? I ought to think of one that has been played on this show so people would kind of know it and give them a chance.
So basically, the first person who answers it on the Facebook page.
Yes. Okay, here we go. This has no lyrics in it, which makes it a lot harder to do. But I've played it quite a few times on this show. So whoever on the Facebook page for Radio Misterioso, or one of the Radio Misteriosos, there are two of them. One is a product service page, which I should probably get rid of and move everybody over to the public group page.
Oh, hey, did you get my message? Your comments aren't working on the radio.
Yes, I have to call up tomorrow. After I get back in, either tomorrow night or Tuesday, I have to call up the server company and say, look, half my stuff didn't. They had to change. This is as a result.
They had to reload it or whatever.
This is as a result of that posting those three
them
shows.
Fucking Roswell slideshow.
Yes,
bullshit.
The Roswell slideshow. Anyway, if whoever can answer the
it's
question.
It's all, what's his name, Don Schmidt's fault.
It's Don Schmidt.
Don Schmidt, if you're out.
You broke my internet and my widow heart. This is the song, and whoever can type in their guess first on Facebook, Radio Misterioso group, if you're on it. It's only open to the Radio Misterioso group
so
people, obviously.
So get your fingers poised.
Yes.
Over the keys of your computer.
And I hope it's actually on my computer.
You want to do a countdown here?
Yeah. You do
you
it.
Do
I picked the song.
From what, five?
Yeah.
And here we go, folks. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Play the whole thing. If nobody gets it in the first minute or so, we'll try another one.
This is too damn obscure.
Okay, now your turn. That'll end it right away. That's just people who can type fast. Because everybody will know that one.
This is a cool song, but nobody's going to get this.
No. Okay, is it a minute in at this point? Yeah, it's a minute and 5 seconds. I've played this on the show before. It's called The Angry Desert by the Sound Offs. I listened to this. I heard this once driving through the desert during a thunderstorm. It just came on by accident on my iPod. It was amazing. Anyway, okay, we're not going to use that one. Everybody's going to know that one right away. That's a contest of internet connection and finger speed. Okay, let me try another one. We got to get somebody. Go Rightly does not want to leave till somebody wins this book. God, how many people do we even have listening anymore? Okay. Yeah, well, you know what? I guess I better get something with lyrics in it. Uh-oh, did somebody guess?
What's going on?
I was told that somebody guessed it.
studio is much nicer these days than it was back in the...
Yeah, you know what? It got cleaned up. It got cleaned up recently.
I mean, it's actually functional now. It's comfortable. Used to be just a bunch of chairs scattered here and there, and mics that were falling down, and now there's you have an actual real table, and we can...
Yeah.
You could get, half a dozen people comfortably around this table to do an interview. So it's much more functional these days.
He said it before he went to the next song. We don't have to do it anymore. Jeremiah Duggar guessed it.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, he guessed Angry Desert.
Okay, so Jeremiah, email me
at
adamgorightly@yahoo.com with your address.
Okay. Sorry about that, Jeremiah. Jeez, you should have started yelling and screaming as soon as I said, well, nobody gets that.
So Jeremiah knew the what desert?
The Angry Desert. Yeah, right. He knew it. I'm going to play the other song anyway. It's not part of the part of the
congratulations,
contest.
Jeremiah.
Yeah. Good one. Sharp-eared listener. Anybody know what this is?
Russia and the USA. Oh, don't let
a show favorite.
What's going on?
It's Rawhide. Ghost Riders in the Sky.
The planet's got no color bars, because they've got perspective. Gangs and Ruskies put men
in
space.
Is this the song that appears in the movie is called Farewell?
I don't think it's in Farewell Good Brothers, though. It's in another contactee movie.
Okay.
You might be right.
While men in capsules explore upstairs, while we can't even manage our own affairs. Some cheap colonization. Beside, they got people on Venus and Mars.
I wouldn't be surprised if this gal showed up at a couple of giant rock conferences over the years.
She was from England. I don't know if she would have made it. Molly Thompson. Molly. Okay, now we're over our time. But congratulations, Jeremiah.
And when you email me, Jeremiah, if you want, I'll sign it. Yeah, that's good. Sign it to you.
Where did he put it? I don't see his... Because Carlos sent me a screenshot of it.
The hell's going on?
I mean, I will trust you, Carlos, because you actually pointed out that somebody else won. Okay, I'll hit refresh or something and see what happens. Yeah, there it is.
Ah, thanks, Carlos, for being on top of it.
Yep. 6 minutes ago. Yeah, a Cockeyed Ballad by Molly Thompson. So we're going to get going. Thanks so much, Mr. Adam Gorightly, for coming on the show and just sitting here and BSing around and see what happens when I have friends on where I don't have any questions. We just BS like we normally would, except as
fun.
If other people are listening, which they are.
This is fun. These are the more interesting shows where you're not, yeah.
Really? You don't like the formal shows with the... I have a set of questions for whoever. I only do that with people I've never talked to before. Like, if I ever get Valet on here. I wrote him. He has not written me back.
Well, we're winding up here. But some shows, it's like...
real question and answer.
Well, it's a question, but then halfway through the answer, they're...
on to something else.
Yeah.
but I remember when Valet was on, and I've complained about this before, when he says... what it looks like is that we are a subset of something else. And then Nori goes, okay, well, that's great. Here's a commercial. Like, what?
Have you ever seen Angels? I get it. I do occasional interviews, and it's like, I'm halfway through, and I'm not talking to because I love hearing my voice and want to keep rattling on, but I want to...
Finish your thought.
Finish the thought, you know, and it's like off in some other direction, so this doesn't... Yeah, make a good show for the listeners to paint the picture of what I'm, but, you know.
Yeah.
You know, no, how it
everybody.
Goes.
Yeah, people should have time to be able to express the thing. And I notice sometimes I get people on that haven't been on the show before. I'll ask them a question. They go blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And like, now, go on, please. You don't have to. You don't have to cut your question off. It's not a regular radio show where you have to answer things as quickly as possible. I don't like that.
Yeah.
What do you want to hear as an outro music thing? Oh, also, if anybody wants to check out what you're doing now, I guess Historia Discordia or...
Yeah, there's all the websites.
Yeah, there's 500 of them. Just type in his name.
Yep. What do I want to hear?
You want to hear anything by the Moonbillies?
I don't know them.
Okay. Just happen to have that up for some reason. I don't know why.
Why don't we close out with Frankie Lane?
Okay. Which one? You the one that we were going to play but didn't?
You know, Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah, his version is very good. That Jewish cowboy Frankie Lane.
So we bid you a fond adieu, Radio Mysterioso listeners.
With Mr. Frankie Lane, Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Good night. God bless.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a-plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw. The ghost herd in the sky. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny and their hot red he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. For he saw the riders coming hard and he heard their mournful cry. Ghost riders in the sky. Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught 'em yet. 'Cause they got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting flame and fire, as they ride on, hear them cry. Loped on by a man, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell or riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride. I'm trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Hippie-I-O. Ghost riders in the sky.